The Leaf Report is brought to you by Game Time, your new go-to app for the best deals on last-minute tickets. You probably didn't know that Leaf tickets and NHL ticket prices drop right before the game starts. Well, Game Time tracks prices in real time from thousands of trusted sellers, then shows you the best last-minute deals with prices up to 60% off. More than 12 million fans have already downloaded the Game Time app and discovered the fastest, easiest way to get into the game. You can look at specific deals from upcoming games. You can look at the seat view from the tickets you're looking at buying. You can highlight tickets across all the major leagues and teams. The app is simple, it's quick, it's easy to navigate, a two-tap checkout system. So head over to the App Store or Play Store now to download the Game Time app and score awesome deals on last-minute tickets. All right, James, we are back with a mid-November podcast. It feels like it's like a tense time around the Leafs. 20 games have passed. They are on a 90-point pace. I was in Long Island on Wednesday night. It felt like a game that they should have won, did not win. And I guess just where we're at with this team is it feels like an underwhelming start, a start where they haven't played to expectations. Like, how do you feel about their first 20 games? And, like, I was thinking at the airport this morning coming back, out of 10, like, what would be your level of concern if you were Kyle Dubas right now?
I don't know.
I did, like, probably a 5.
I'm going to say, like, a 7, 7.5.
Okay. So that's pretty high.
I'd be more concerned than not. Like, I don't think there's no concern. They don't look very good. Like, the thing that we have to keep in mind is the expectation levels on this team are very, very high. I mean, they've won 3 of their last,
like, they had a stretch where they went 4-1-1 pretty recently.
Right.
But it's not like you could look at those games and be like, wow, that's a cup team right there.
So they've won 4 of the last 11. How many games this season have there been where you were like, wow, like, look at this team. Like, look at they got 3 of the $11 million guys, and they've got all this firepower in the back end, and Frederik Andersen is one of the best goalies in the league. And, you know, like, both special teams have been problematic most of the year. There have been goaltending issues. There have been even strength issues. There have been defensive issues. There have been a lot of, I think that they've significantly underperformed, for sure.
I guess a few points to that. I can't dispute any of that. Like, I was thinking, when I was writing my story after the game against the Islanders, I was trying to think, like, what's, like, the best win that they've had this year? And, like, I guess you could say, yeah, like, I guess you could say San Jose, but San Jose is, like, not a great team.
No, they've had a bad
year. You could look at, right?
Like, they were in a second game of a back-to-back that night too, right?
Right. You could look at the Vegas win. Like, that's an overtime win. It wasn't like it was a fine performance. Like, it wasn't spectacular. I guess you could look at the Boston game where they went in overtime, but even that, it's like that you haven't, and Babcock talked about this, like, there isn't a game where you can look at and say, that's how they need to play. Like, that's them. Like, that's them at their best. This is that team. It's also only 20 games, and 20 games is not nothing. Like, it's a quarter of the season. Does it still feel too early to be 7 out of 10 concerned? Like, why is now the right time to be, like, alarmed?
Well, when we were 13 games in, I wrote the piece, and I see fans are throwing it back at me today in defense of Mike Babcock. But essentially what I was saying was that it's so early. There are a lot of things that have gone wrong that aren't on the coaching staff. We need to see more of what this team is over the next month or two before we can start to, you know, talk about firing people and trading everybody and like all of this stuff. Like it's still early. You're right. But then again, we're a quarter of the way into the season. I think it's still early, but if they continue to look like this for another 10 or 15 games, all of a sudden it's not early anymore. All of a sudden you're, and 10 or 15 games in the NHL, I mean, it only takes you a month to get there. So you can say it's early, but the fact that we're 20 games in and we're not sure, we can't pick out one game that we like that they played is,
yeah,
it's not great. It's not great. And the other thing too is that I'm not sure what you can point to right now and say that's where the turnaround's going to come. You know, when Tavares was out, it was kind of like,
I think I could.
Oh, what do you think's going to be the turnaround?
I thought about this. I actually was going to include it in my story, and then I thought, you know what? Like, I can't say these things for certain, and then I probably actually couldn't imply them, and maybe I should have. What I think could turn around, I think a lot of their new players can get more comfortable. I think we haven't seen anything close to the best of Tyson Barrie. I think Kerfoot has shown spurts of like what he can do. I think Mikheyev has kind of come back to earth a little bit. I just think like you throw that many new players and combinations into the mix at once, like four new lines, three new D pair, a backup goalie who did not perform. Like I was just thinking to myself, like, what if they had competent goaltending on those nights and they had two more wins, three more wins? Would we be looking at them a little bit differently? So like what can turn around? I think that those guys, the new players to the team, can get more comfortable. They can get more comfortable with the system. I mean, they brought in two new assistant coaches, changes to their power play, changes to their penalty kill. That can get more comfortable. And I think their stars can play a lot better. I think Matthews obviously, you know, has put himself in the top 10 in scoring. He's been better and better of late. William Nylander is playing better and better. I imagine we'll eventually see the best of John Tavares. Frederik Andersen didn't play great in Long Island, but he seems to be rounding into form. Like a lot of these things, I think, can turn. I think their special teams can be better, but that doesn't mean it will be better. It just feels like those are a lot of things that could change in a different direction.
I guess what I'm saying, though, is I'm just not sure if they are going to get better or not. Like, I'm not
sure.
The thing with the Leafs' performance to date is that they don't look great. Their record is not great. And if you look at like the underlying numbers and some of those things, they're not very good. Like when we were talking about this a couple of weeks ago, there was more room, I think, for reason for optimism looking at some of that stuff. That's become less the case over the last couple of weeks. Like it's their results, their underlying numbers have become more problematic the last little while.
Okay, well, I have some of them from my story. So scoring chance percentage, they're 12th. Expected goals, 23rd. Expected goals for, 21st. Expected goals against, 19th. That's 5-on-5. The power play numbers are okay, like some of the underlying numbers. The penalty killing numbers are bad. So that's not encouraging. I don't think you can discount, we didn't mention like some of the injuries. You lose John Tavares for 7 of the first 20 games. That hurts. They didn't have Zach Hyman. That hurts. They didn't have Travis Dermott. That hurts. That said, like, you can't look at them and look at their talent and say that they have performed up to their talent. Like, you look at some other teams, like, you can look at the Islanders and look at a lot of the underlying numbers, and they're not good, but they have played above their talent level. Like, you look at that lineup and you're like, how is this team winning games? And you look at the Leaf lineup and you're like, how is this team not winning more games? You know what I mean?
Well, on the Islanders, I mean, if we're looking at expected goals, and that's a number that Kyle Dubas and has talked about in the past as one that he looks at as one of the metrics. I mean, the Islanders are right next to the Leafs in terms of expected goals. So we can talk about their underlying numbers aren't good, but, you know, there's an example of one of the alarming things. If you look at the data with the Leafs, is that a lot of their strength the last 2 or 3 years has been they've been able to generate better chances than most teams in the league. Like, they might not always be the best possession or Corsi team, or they might not spend a lot of time in the offensive zone, but they really got to the net really well. They were really attacking down low really well and getting a lot of those opportunities. that really seems to be less the case this year. And that's been one of the things. In Anderson's going to be good. The power play was relatively strong, and they generate a lot of high quality chances at even strength. And they're not doing that right now. So I think if there's anything that's the most concerning part of all of this, it's probably the fact that you talk about identity. It's almost like they lost the identity that they've had the last couple of years, where they were able to do some of those things.
Yeah, offensively they haven't been great. I do think that they've found a line that has been getting more consistent with Matthews, Nylander, and Johnsson. That has a lot to do with Nylander, I think, performing better. Maybe now that they have Hyman back, the Tavares line gets a little better, but they don't have Marner. It's like the injuries have to be part of this too. Like, you wonder how they'll adapt these next few weeks without Marner. Like, how long does he miss? How do they replace what he brings? And yet, like, you look at their third line, they should be getting more from their third line than they got last year. Their fourth line is not going to give them any offense. So, I don't know. Do you think that has something to do with it? I think they, like, you add Tyson Barrie. Tyson Barrie shoots a lot. And one thing, like, that stood out again against the Islanders, his shot isn't getting through at all. It's getting blocked constantly. So, like, that's a little thing. I just think it, like, I wonder if it's just, like, a lot of these little things are all adding up to them being underwhelming so far, like injuries, new players, stars, new coaches, new special teams. But it, like, to your point, like, there's just, like, been a malaise over everything so far.
And I why would the scoring chances dry up? Like, that's a really weird thing. Maybe the personnel that they changed to, maybe it was a step backwards. You know, in some of these,
but it's not that different, right? Like, it's different on defense. It's not that different up front. Like, those first two lines are basically the same, right? Like, the personnel is basically the same. You've you've changed the fourth line to the point that they literally aren't there to generate offense. Although they did generate some chances in Long Island. But, like, they're not giving you anything offensively. That's not even, like, how they see their jobs. The third line, like, why shouldn't a third line of Kerfoot, Moore, Mikheyev, Kapanen, like, why shouldn't that generate something for you?
Yeah, and it's interesting, you know, looking at it, if you look at, like, individual expected goals or individual scoring chances, Kerfoot and Mikheyev and Moore are all fine. Like, they're some of the most – they're generating the most – threats of that they've got on the team. You know, it almost just feels like they've got, for some reason, I don't know why, if this is a stylistic change or this is something I've been thinking about, and it's kind of like a embryonic idea because I haven't fully thought it through or written about it or whatever. Like, I wonder if changing the style that they've played, there was all that talk the last 2 years about the stretch pass and like how Zaitsev and Hainsey were just kind of hammering it out of the zone, and maybe they've lost their ability to generate chances like odd man rushes, and maybe the way that they're breaking out of the zone and playing through the neutral zone is a reason that they're not generating as many high quality chances. And it doesn't seem like they spend a lot of time in the offensive zone. Like, it doesn't seem like they're not really a cycle.
That's what I think is notable. Yeah.
They're not really a cycle team, but they've never really been a cycle team though, under like the last 3 years. Like, their personnel has never really. But what they had last year and the year before was that, you know, they would get Kapanen and going on a rush or whatever, and they would get some odd man rushes more than what we've seen this year. Something's happening where they're just not generating as many. And the other thing too, that, and Ian Tulloch's written about this, is that the defensemen seem to be taking a higher percentage of the shots. Like, if you look at individual expected goals for their defensemen, they're all really, really low. Really low. Like, Barry's, you know, those shots that he's taking are giving them nothing. There's just no value to that. And he's taken a lot of shots. You know, he's had almost 8 shots per 60 minutes at even strength. Like, if Barry's shooting the puck more than, you know, per minute, more than, you know, Mikheyev and Tavares and Marner and Kapanen, you know, is Barry the guy you want? He's shooting, Barry's shooting the puck as frequently as Nylander, as Johnsson. You know, the only players that are shooting more than Barry are Austin Matthews and Trevor Moore. That's not ideal. And that's, I'm not even looking at shot attempts. Like if we do, you're talking about how everything's getting blocked by him. You do it to, you move it to shot attempts, and then it becomes even more stark. Just how many, what percentage of their shot attempts are coming from Tyson Barry?
Mm-hmm. Well, but I would argue last year they at least had like one kind of like grind you down line with the Tavares line, and they haven't had that. And like you mentioned it, like their offense is all kind of like one and done. Like there's not a lot of that Boston Bruins type top line roll around. And what's weird is like they've changed the way that they're giving out assignments, where they're starting those lines in the offensive zone way more. Mm. Mm. So you would think like it would translate to the opposite. You know what I mean? Like you would think it would translate to better scoring numbers because you're getting the offensive players in the offensive zone more often. No?
Yes. And I've seen some folks on Twitter, like Dreg, like Pole, and some of these folks have pointed out that they've got this really extreme usage for the fourth line where they're getting every single, they're only getting defensive zone starts. And that might be okay, but you need to see the payoff on the other lines. And I'm not sure that we've seen it. So you've got this fourth line that isn't going to generate offense and that starts in the D zone every shift, which should in theory be making life easier for the other lines. But just looking at the results in terms of the chances they're generating and things like that, that payoff isn't there. And I don't know the reason why it's not there.
Well, you know what it might be? Like you wonder, like, let's just think about the Matthews line. When they're starting in their own zone, and let's say they're able to get the puck out, which they can do, obviously. And then they're
a real
you,
threat?
Yeah, like then they get you on your heels if you're the opposition, because they're coming at you with speed, and then you've got Nylander and Matthews and Johnsson all playing off the rush. I don't know. Maybe you take some of that away when you just start them in the offensive zone. Like maybe it's like I think of basketball, and like sometimes it's easier to defend when your defense is set, and it's harder to defend when like a team is running, because then you can't set your defense. You know what I mean?
So the classic line that was at the forefront of kind of this zone shifting, I think was what it was called when it started to happen. Mm-hmm. Do you know which one it was that started doing this really aggressively? It was
the Sedins.
The Sedins, right. So yeah. Under Alain Vigneault, you know, when I think it was it Daniel that won the Hart or the Art Ross or whatever, like when the Sedins were some of the high scoring players in the league, they would start them in the offensive zone 75% of the time. And but the thing is that style of play, the Sedins are not that fast. And what they are really good at is playing in the offensive zone and cycling the puck around. And the Leafs, like I said, the Leafs have not been an elite Corsi possession team the last few years with the personnel that they have. They just haven't been. But what they've been good at is generating high quality chances. And it's that, like I said, I think that's the most alarming thing. Like you can make excuses for all of this other stuff, like the injuries and the new players and all these, but there's a stylistic thing that's happening that's taken away one of their biggest strengths. And
well, but what's unusual, James, is like now they are becoming, or they become like a better possession team. But it's like, it's kind of like empty calories a little bit.
Yeah. That's what I was going to say. It's like, and even then, like they're not like a dominant possession team. Like they've gotten a little bit better. Like last year they were at like in Corsi, they were like 51 something percent, and now they're at 52.4. So they've gained a little bit, and that might be, you know, all the point shots and the zone shifting and that paying off in that respect, but they're, mm-hmm. they've lost something else.
Well, like look at the game against the Islanders. So let's just look at the possession. The possession, I'll adjust it. Possession was 60% for the Leafs. Then you go to expected goals, and it's 50-50.
Always adjust your possession, people. Don't use unadjusted.
So
you get
like
score
it's
effects,
like,
and you get all kinds of stuff in there. You got to adjust your possession.
So then it's 50-50, and it's like, maybe that's like that's the tale of the season almost.
I think the Chicago game was similar, right? Or like, yeah, the Chicago game was. I think that they were ahead in terms of controlling play, and they were behind in terms of expected goals. And that Chicago's a team that was like third or fourth last in goal production coming into that game. And a little bit of that's Hutchinson, but they also, the Leafs gave up better chances than the Blackhawks did. And that's the other thing that we haven't talked about, but like defensively, the Leafs give up some really good chances, and they're actually fortunate how good Anderson has been. Anderson has been ridiculously good most of the last 2 or 3 weeks. So, but they just like, I think their record kind of is what they are right now. Like maybe you can argue they'd be a little bit better if, you know, everyone was healthy and things like that. But like, they don't look like a 100-point team so far this season.
No, they do not. All right, James, I know you are like me. Sometimes you come home from a long day at the arena or a long day talking on the phone. You're a big, important boss with The Athletic. And sometimes you just don't feel like cooking. I know you're not as big a cook as I am. I like to cook. But sometimes I don't feel like cooking at all. And that's when I like to use DoorDash just to order something quick. I get it home. I just start eating. I'm a big fan of burgers. I love Burger Priest. I like Rudy. DoorDash connects you to your favorite restaurants in the city, in your city. That's us, Toronto. Ordering is easy. All you have to do is open the DoorDash app. You choose what you want to eat, and your food will be delivered to you wherever you are. Right now, our listeners can get $5 off their first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and enter the promo code LEAF. That's $5 off your first order when you download the DoorDash app from the App Store and enter the promo code LEAF. Don't forget, that is the promo code LEAF for $5 off your first order from DoorDash. We obviously should talk about Marner being out the next few weeks. But since we're on the goaltending, we haven't mentioned that Hutchinson was waived and replaced. I'm more of the opinion, like, they gave up some great chances in all those games. But to me, it's like very clear that he is not an NHL goaltender right now. Where do you kind of fall on that spectrum of they're giving up really good chances, but he's also letting in a lot of goals that an NHL goalie should not let in?
It's both. The team did not play very well in those games. They really did not. They really were not good defensively. But the other thing you notice with Hutchinson is that he gives up a lot of rebounds. Like,
yes,
he doesn't
bad rebounds.
He doesn't settle the play. So like, if you just watch the pass and the shot that beat him, it's like, oh, how could he have stopped that? But some of those plays don't exist if you're sucking the puck in the way that the best goalies in the NHL do, like Carey Price. And Anderson's like that too. Like, Anderson catches a lot of pucks. Hutchinson, his glove hand is not very good. It's not. It's just like, I don't have like historical numbers on his glove hand and whatever, but like, you can just tell watching him that a lot of stuff he reminds me of Reimer a little bit. He like, you hit it away with your glove as opposed to, and that can make a big difference because all of a sudden, you know, your team doesn't know where the puck's going when it rebounds off the goalie. And if you look at, there's data on this, I don't have it in front of me, but the rebound chances when Hutchinson's in net are way, way higher. And you can argue some of that is that the Leafs are playing those games tired and not very well defensively, but that's not all of it. It's just, it's not. And it's hard to evaluate goalies when, like, he's played 300 minutes. He's started 5 games, you know, but he hasn't been good enough. And this is what I was concerned about and what surprised me. I mean, if you go back and listen to our summer podcast and our preseason podcast, I was saying the whole way along that I thought they were going to get another goalie, that they need a guy, even a guy who's going to be that Hutchinson was a good number three option if someone gets hurt, and they never did. And they don't really have a good number three option now. Like, Kaskisu had a good playoff last year for the Marlies kind of unexpectedly, and he's had a good start to the season. But, man, like, it's not like they don't really have anywhere to turn here that gives you a lot of confidence. And I agree with the decision to waive Hutchinson. Some people seem surprised about it or whatever, but Hutchinson's a, like, he seems like a great guy, but he's a dime a dozen guy. Like, he's a league minimum guy who's a decent AHL goalie. Like, you can find a Hutchinson, like, they're probably on waivers like every 2 or 3 weeks. Like, he's not special. So, like, waiving him to try your other goalie who's playing really well and has a lot of confidence right now is a complete no-brainer. Like, there's no, I don't know how you could criticize this decision at all. What you can criticize is the fact that they didn't go get another goalie.
Yeah, but even that, like, it has its thorns. Like, they don't have any cap space. Like, where are you going to get another goalie? Like, you don't have room. Like, you barely have room when everyone's healthy with Hutchinson making 700. Like, I just don't know how you, who you find. Who do you get?
I mean,
you could make a trade and, like, you give up something and maybe the team eats a bunch of that guy's money. But, like, is that guy, like, substantially better? You know what I mean? Like, I'm starting to wonder,
like, Jonas,
in your mailbag, like, you mentioned, like, someone asked you about Jimmy Howard. Jimmy Howard's, like, maybe
not,
marginally
he's not
better.
Any better than he's not even much better than Hutchinson, yeah.
It's like one of the costs of like, paying your stars a lot of money. Like, you just don't have a lot of room. Like, something has to be sacrificed, and that's what it is.
I guess they could drop down to, like, a bare minimum roster of 20 players and not have any extra players, and you could bring in... I mean, they really only have, like, an extra... It's, like, 200 grand or something, right? So they can only spend, at the backup goalie position, they can only spend 900K without having to trade something else out. Or they could demote. They could go with no extra forwards, no extra defensemen, and get a more expensive goalie. Like, then you could get a backup that makes... what, 1.5 or something like that?
Mm-hmm. I just don't think you can argue.
Why do you think they did this? Why did they make this decision? Like, do you think they, like, overrated what Hutchinson was? Or
I honestly, like, when I was looking at some of their stuff in the off season, like, you and I both came around to their goaltending, and we both concluded what's been the case, that it looked really weak, that they didn't have a lot of depth. But I just don't know, like, what else could they have done?
You could find a better goalie, but if we go back to that time,
what else could you have done? I guess you could have tried to trade for someone and get that team to retain something. But, like, who is that guy?
Yeah, I've been playing around with if they get some team to give them a goalie. And, like, They could get a league minimum goalie. Like, I was looking at Jack Campbell in LA. He's the backup there. I don't know how much better he is than Hutchinson, but he's a young guy. His numbers are okay. But I wondered, like, if, like, LA season's a wash, basically. Like, if they retained half his salary, then all of a sudden the Leafs have a backup goalie that's making $350. And I checked, and, like, that's legal. Like, you can do that. You can get teams to retain half a salary of a league minimum guy, and then you can have players that make less than the league minimum. And that might be something that the Leafs have to look at doing, because that could potentially free them up to have more players on the roster if they can get some guys that are making, you know, 300 and something. But that's not necessarily a big upgrade over what you got. But it just, like, if Kaskisiu doesn't work out, then they got to go get somebody else, right?
Yeah, and then you have to pay something. Like, then you have to pay an asset. Like, if you're one of these teams and you know the Leafs are in a crunch, you're not going to, like, expect something great for one of these guys, but you're still going to expect something, especially if you're retaining money. The one thing, like, that we didn't mention, and that I'm kicking myself that I didn't mention in my story after the game in Long Island, when I was kind of going through everything that's happened, is they did try something else. They did try to bring Michael Neuwirth in on a PTO, and, like, based on his track record, he would be better than Hutchinson. He just, like, couldn't, literally in camp, just couldn't stay healthy. And, like, that's obviously the knock on his career. They tried that, and that, it just bombed because he was hurt.
Yeah, but, like, if they talk to anybody in the Flyers organization, like, that's been dogging him for, like, months, or years and years. Like, he's had many seasons where he hasn't been healthy reliably. Yeah. Like, he's not playing anywhere right now. Like, I think he's done. You know, he's only 30 years old and his career's over. And that like that never made sense to me. Is like that's your fallback? Like, what if he can't play? And that's what ended up happening. Like, it.
But what else do you do?
The whole backup goalie things. Well, they gotta like. I mean, Pittsburgh waived DeSmith. I mean, like they had
that guy was making too much. I think.
Yeah, well, get them to retain, give them something better, or like you're looking at this, so like they have to make this decision in September. I mean, they could have tried to make this decision in May or June or July and like made it more of a priority to figure out who their backup goalie is going to be.
No, but I'm saying like I'm trying to think of like what they could have done in the summer, and I don't know what it is.
Well, do you want me to pull up the list of all the like the backup goalies in the league and what their numbers are? Like,
yeah, they all are not good. They're all just dudes.
All the backups are bad in the whole league?
The guys that were available? Like, teams aren't just going to trade you their decent backup. Don't they need their decent backup?
Well, I mean, it just sounds like we're just like we can't say that there was nothing.
Honestly, we criticize them in the summer. No, we criticize them. Like, I criticized it in the summer. Like, I didn't think that they were deep enough. And obviously, that's proven to be the case. But, like, now that I'm thinking about it, I don't know what they could have done given the world that they were occupying with Marner being unsigned and like not having cap space. Like, it's going to bite them. Like, this is just, it's bitten them. Especially
there's my guy, Tristan Jarry, 929 save percentage in Pittsburgh. That's who I wanted them to go after.
Right. They
Pittsburgh
kept
didn't want to, I know, but like, it just didn't seem like it was a high enough priority having a decent backup.
Yeah, well, and we've talked about like that. You and I both believe that it's an undervalued position, and it would be thrust into a crazy limelight if Anderson ever got hurt.
Well, Anders Nielsen in Ottawa's having a good start. Ottawa's maybe they'll trade him.
Yeah, and honestly, maybe it'll get to that point. Just because like you need to have a little bit more security, like you'd like someone who could forget about just starting these second half of back to backs. You'd like someone who could like play a bit and maybe take the odd start from Anderson, like not just those crappy starts, you know?
Ryan Miller's having a good start. I wonder if Anaheim's not in contention if they'll trade him during the season.
Doesn't like what's Georgiev
and I don't think Miller's making that much. Miller I think he might have a bonus. I think he might have bonuses in his deal.
I'm guessing he doesn't want to leave there.
No, I don't think he would want to leave. No. Because he's got his family and everything there, and but maybe like it's in, like a trade deadline thing, and he leaves for 2 months or whatever. I mean, they're going to have to if. I mean, I know that they're in a position now where they're going to. It's we're not sure if they're going to make the playoffs or not right now, but they're going to have to address the backup goalie situation before they go into the playoffs.
You would think so, and yet I would be like. It's really tough. Like you don't like want to give up something good to get a backup goalie, and yet it can cost you big time. Anyway, we should
talk
about.
And he's got a 906 save percentage right now.
So like sub league average. What is the league average this year? Is it like
James Reimer 901 league average? I don't know. I don't know. I haven't looked at what exactly it is this year, but it's usually like I think it's probably around, probably just over 910. Probably. It changes every year.
I can pull it up really quickly. Got it. It is 908.
Yeah. So that's lower than it's been in the past. Jonathan Bernier, 891.
Yeah. So like not much better. What is your level of, I like this level of concern. We should have like a rating, a meter.
You're going to do that for me for every single question around the team?
Well, how significant do you think, like when we look at like the pecking order, where would Marner being out for a month and maybe more, like high ankle sprains are not a joke.
Yeah, probably like
where would
he weeks.
Rank in like the order of Leafs they could least afford to lose for like a month plus?
Anderson's number one for me, for sure. Obviously, if Anderson went down, that would be cataclysmic, especially if he was down for a long period of time. Next, to me, would be Tavares or Matthews. Probably Matthews, with the way Matthews is producing right now, would be a big hit. Mm-hmm. Then it's going to be Riley or Muzzin on the back end of the minutes that they're playing. I just think they're better equipped to replace Marner.
And then it's probably Marner, though, like after those guys.
Yeah. Yeah. But they've got a lot of scoring on the wing. They've got guys that they could bump up. It's certainly not ideal. But the other thing, too, is, though, Jonas, is that like the power play has been so ineffective with Marner there. It's almost a blessing in a little bit of a sense. And just like they can try some different looks and get away from what wasn't working with Marner there. And they're going to miss him for sure. But it seems like he's, I don't know. I know he has a point of game, but it's been a bit of a tough year with the new contract and everything. And then he gets hurt and then he's going to have to come back. Maybe his skating won't be all the way there just because of that injury. It's tough. I mean,
but you know what, James?
It's going to be interesting.
Go ahead.
Like, they got to get out of this funk without him here in the next 6 weeks. Otherwise, like, can you imagine what the mood's going to be like in the market if they keep, you know, if they're on pace for 85 points in another month or two?
Mm-hmm. Well, but the thing with Marner is, and like, it's kind of speaks to when you're a good player, like, even when he's not having a good year, he's a point of game. And it's like, it's funny how it seems to work that way sometimes with players of his caliber. And like, the 5-on-5 production has not been good. It's not been good for Tavares. But like, you still look at the end of the day and it's like, oh, like, he still has 18 points in 18 games. I'm curious, and I'm obviously, I wrote about it. I'm curious, like, how that line functions without him, like what Tavares can do without Marner. Obviously, he did perform for years and years and years in Long Island.
I thought he looked good against the Islanders.
They look good, right?
He might have been their best skater, I thought.
Yeah, and honestly, you know, Mike Babcock, like, goes over the top with it sometimes, but you could see the difference that Hyman makes, too, right?
Yeah, and he played well, too. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, he's... Yeah. But they just need some players like that, that they're doing what Hyman does, and it comes down to the cycle game thing that we're talking about a little bit, and
that line, Hyman, Tavares... But listen, man, like, Tavares is one of the highest-paid players in the league. He needs to be able to, like, drive a line without Marner. Like,
He can drive a line. He's shown it for years,
yeah.
It almost makes me think that maybe Tavares and Matthews and Marner could all be on different lines, and then you'd have a real threat on all three.
Well, that would be really interesting if this combination of Hyman, Tavares, and Kapanen worked, and then you brought Marner back and played him, like, with Kerfoot. Anyway, well, that's a long way off. We'll see. Anything else you want to talk about before we wrap?
No, I think that's it. I think we covered it. It's, you know, they lost three games in a row. People might wonder, like, if you go back and listen to some of the podcasts, we weren't quite as negative, but they lost three games, and, you know, some of the problems that were there earlier are getting more pronounced, and this upcoming road trip, Pittsburgh, Vegas, Arizona, Colorado, it's going to be really big. You know, they need to find a way out of the funk.
Well, I mean, even before that, like, they've got Boston on Friday, then they play in Pittsburgh on Saturday, and obviously Pittsburgh won't have Crosby, but that'll be Cascasuo's first game. We'll see how that goes. I do actually, before we go, I'm sure you saw Kyle Dubas's defense of Cody Ceci. What do you think of Cody Ceci and the season that he's had, and what do you make of that?
I mean, you and I have both written about Ceci in the last, like, week, right? Like, and his numbers are fine. And, like, I don't think he should be in the role that he's in, but I can see why the Leafs are doing it, because they don't really have a great option to play those hard minutes. And
I think what he's calling out is a double standard a little bit, whereas if you're going to call a guy out for his numbers being really bad, which obviously CC's were in Ottawa, then you also have to be fair. And when they're halfway decent here, like, you can't have it both ways, I guess.
Who's he responding to? It's like almost like he's talking, like, not to the media, but to, like a lot of the media don't use those numbers.
It's only you, me, and probably CJ.
Right.
I don't know that it's,
I haven't seen, but, like, elsewhere. I don't know. Like, did you feel like your story was, like...
No, I pointed out the numbers. Really, like, I literally wrote in the story that, like, if you strip away, like, everything you thought about him before and you just looked at the numbers, you'd be like, eh, he's been fine. But maybe it's fans. Like, Kyle Dubas is on Twitter.
Yeah, well, it's... Yeah, it feels like a GM now is like talking about what's being said unfairly about one of his players is like kind of like the, maybe it's like radio and stuff. I mean, it doesn't just have to be the writers, right? It could be, you know, other media people. CC, I said this to you at the last game we were at together, that there's a little bit of, I think I said there's a little bit of Gardner in him, and that he'll look fine for long stretches and then he'll make a big mistake and it'll cost them. Obviously they're way different players, but there's that element of the big mistake a little bit to CC, and those guys sometimes get criticized a lot more than other players who don't have the same makeup.
Yes, very fair. All right. Next time we chat, you'll be in, I'm trying to look at where the game is next week. You'll be in Arizona. Ooh.
Yeah, we'll probably do it after the Vegas game, right?
Yeah, yeah. On the Wednesday. So that should be fun. All right. Well,
thank you for giving me the Vegas Arizona road trip in November when there's a foot of snow outside in Toronto. I appreciate that.
Enjoy it. Enjoy it, man. It'll be warm. You won't have to look at snow for a few days.
Love it.
All right. Talk next week. Thanks, dude.